Now it's time to turn it up. Surf the radio waves as we begin to burn it up. We all up in your area like landscape. Definitely bringing you the power slam of pancakes. It's the mandate that you tune in. It's time to move out so we can move in. And recognize that this is no illusion. I'm here to clear the air so that there is no confusion. It all started off in the book of Genesis when Jacob was wrestling with who he thought was his nemesis. And when the man saw he couldn't overpower him, he touched his hip but he really could have devoured him. And from that point then we hear a name change. Rearrange the game so now we gotta change. So I'm here to let you know it's time to listen to the Pancake and Power Slam Show. Let's go!
Turn it up, turn it up. It's the Pancake and Power Slam. Turn it up, turn it up. It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam Show.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam Show.
Indeed, indeed, indeed. It is the Pancakes and Power Slam Show. We are here live every week, just like we do. Have a lot of fun. I'm Chris Featherstone here to host this week's episode of Pancakes and Power Slams. Without further ado, let's go to this week's news. Possibilities increase that Jeff Hardy will take some time off when his contract expires in early 2013. They're trying to kind of give him more of an incentive to stay. That's one of the reasons why he won the Bound for Glory series and may take the title from Austin Aries. We'll see, but he's not really buying into it, as reports say now, and he's looking to take some considerable amount of time off to heal himself from being banged up and for so long. And he's also considering strongly to come back to the WWE. So we'll see if that happens, and we will find that out come early 2013. Beth Phoenix reported she's leaving the WWE soon. Looks like sometime in October is when she'll be done. Seems like it's a good move for her because she has just been on the losing end for too long now, and her career is just going nowhere fast. And maybe a TNA move. It seems like she may be like a Victoria for TNA, because it really seems like she needs that, because she's not doing anything in the WWE. She's grossly underutilized, and she's the best diva on the roster, but she seems like she loses the most. So we will see as far as the future of Beth Phoenix after she allegedly leaves the WWE. WWE signs a deal with Hulu. Hulu's an online kind of site. Network type of thing. They show videos and things of that nature. They have a Hulu type of account. I think it's what they're trying to do is the Hulu Plus type of thing, and I think it's like $8 a month, and it's like $8 a month. And what they do is they show archived shows and things of that nature. So we'll see how that actually affects the future as far as WWE Network. And finally, D-Von planning on returning to TNA for one night to drop the title. We reported a few weeks before here on the show that D-Von, his contract has expired, and they did not negotiate a proper renewal, so he's planning on coming one night to be a part of the tournament. All right, people who are looks like the chat room's starting to fill up. Tweet at Crave Wrestling, call in 347-884-8452. Stay in the chat room. For those who are new to the chat room, we usually do some good trivia. And so we will start now. Who did Christian defeat at WrestleMania 20? That is the first trivia question of the night. Who did Christian went, who did Christian defeat at WrestleMania 20? For those who listen to the show, you should know who my favorite wrestler is. And so, basically, well, it looks like the chat room has already figured that out. Looks like I need to go a little harder. Looks like Jerome got that right. He beat Chris Jericho, indeed. He beat Chris Jericho at WrestleMania 20 with a little Trish Stratus was involved as well. So 347-884-8452. We will. Jerome also says that WrestleMania 20 was his first WrestleMania. He can't forget it. So I had no idea, but good deal. Let's go to Raw. We get a Paul Heyman promo. CM Punk sitting in chair complains about last week's controversial finish. Then he calls out the ref, Brad Maddox, and asks him to admit his wrongdoing and resign. CM Punk gets up and then confronts Maddox. AJ comes out. CM Punk tells AJ why she has it out for him. And then Paul Heyman eventually cuts a promo and proposes to AJ, which is kind of weird to me. And AJ eventually slaps Paul Heyman. And that was nearly a 15-minute intro opener. It was a little too big for me. A little too much for me. I don't really think that it was appropriate as far as the length of it. And I definitely think that it could have been written a little bit more. The whole marriage thing was really off to me. I really didn't understand it. Heyman's always golden on the mic. You know, I always love hearing Heyman on the mic. He's one of the best. But, you know, it was a little off to me. Tweet at Crave Wrestling your thoughts, or put them in the chat room. I'll go ahead. It looks like the chat room's filling up. Next question is, what was the main event at SummerSlam 89? Looks like that's going to be a little bit more difficult. What was the main event at SummerSlam 1989? Then we go on to AJ and Brad Maddox's backstage segment. AJ tells Maddox he will be fired if he makes the same mistake, and then she starts crying. I have no idea what that was about. That was just really weird. Maybe that's a prelude to knowing that she's going to be, because there's some reports that she's going to be removed from general manager soon, which I think definitely is a good idea. It would be best for her to stay involved in the women's scene, especially since Eve is the champ now. They need a strong baby face to chase the title, and I definitely think that AJ would be that person. Her as general manager, I mean, to me it was doomed from the beginning. Really didn't make much sense to me, but they tried to do it, but it's only been 2 months, a little over 2 months now, and yeah, it's not a good idea. Dolph Ziggler defeats Kofi Kingston. Outstanding match. Outstanding match. They usually put it together. They've had all different types of they've had all different types of matches for the US and for the Intercontinental title, and they put on a clinic every time. It seems like they're the modern day Steamboat and Savage. Speaking of Savage, we did get the right answer for the question. It was indeed Macho Man and Zeus versus Hulk Hogan and Brutus Beefcake for the 89 main event. Another question coming up here soon. But yeah, they usually do a really good job with putting it together. Ziggler needed this win. And I'll still keep saying it really doesn't matter that Ziggler wins or loses. He has the briefcase, and I keep saying the same thing, and it bears repetition. He shouldn't be on some type of winning streak just because he has a briefcase. Case in point, Daniel Bryan last year had the briefcase. He was still losing a lot of matches, and then, like I said, he won in December last year and didn't look back. So it's cool. I mean, you know, it looks like Ziggler's win-loss record is just about the same as before he got the briefcase, which is good. Just because he wins the briefcase doesn't make him win more matches. So good idea for that as far as not making him some type of hot streak. Then we see the first Daniel Bryan, Dr. Shelby, and Kane, a.k.a. Gerald, Diner segment. They just continue to – it seems like they have, like, a special assignment or a special unit to write these scripts concerning the team name that we'll get to later. It's a really good – I mean, it just continues to be hilarious. I mean, it's not stale. There's some – you know, there's been some reports over the past couple weeks of people believing that it's going to get stale soon, but so far so good. It doesn't seem like that's going to happen anytime soon, so I definitely hope that that would be the case as far as not getting stale. But yeah, I mean, it definitely seems like it's on the right track, so kudos to that. Kudos to them. Kudos to those people who have put together that and definitely keep it going. Who did Stephanie McMahon date before Triple H? Who did Stephanie McMahon date before Triple H? And if you want to one-up me, who did Triple H date before Stephanie McMahon? So two-parter, but a one-parter altogether. Who did Stephanie date, and who did Triple H date before yes, absolutely. Chat room got it right already. Test in China. Looks like I need to get a little bit more harder. That was easy. What year was the first Survivor Series? Looks like that might be a little easy too. So, what year was the first Survivor Series? Then we'll go to the primetime players defeating Santino and Zack Ryder. This is pretty much self-explanatory. It just looks like they're trying to push primetime players, which is cool, at the expense of Santino and Zack Ryder, unfortunately. But Santino is just a glorified jobber now. It just seems like Santino's just heading south real soon, and Zack Ryder's accompanying him, and it's an unfortunate situation. But they had to be the sacrificial lambs of primetime players. It's just really tough to see someone like Zack Ryder, who was just at the peak of his career, around a little less than a year ago, whole U.S. title thing and the whole petitioning and things of that nature. He was just one of the middle tier, nearly top baby faces at one point in time. And it really seems like the whole Kane and Eve feud really had him going downhill then. And It's weird, and I talked to a friend about this before, how it seems like Eve was a career killer and has been a career killer, because she was with the whole Zack Ryder thing kind of killed his career, and for a long point of time she was with R-Truth, and I've been an R-Truth fan for quite some time. I wasn't a K-Quick fan, but I was a Ron the Truth Killings fan in TNA. I was happy that he had the chance to become NWA champion twice. But when he was with Eve, I had to relinquish my likeness for R-Truth. And but when he turned heel again and did the whole little Jimmy thing, he regained my likeness, and I still like him now. But definitely, Eve is just a career killer, and Zack Ryder is a victim of that now. So it's unfortunate, but it doesn't seem like we'll see anything soon with Santino or Zack Ryder. What did Vincent Mann say about Bret Hart after the Montreal screw job? Three words. It's a quote that is resonating, and three words as far as McMahon interview, the three words that he said. It looks like the chat room has answered that one already. Bret screwed Bret. Absolutely. Bret screwed Bret. All right, we have another question coming here soon. Then we saw Mick Foley come back. It was good to see him. Mick Foley cuts a promo, interrupted by CM Punk. It was a good promo, and it was good to use Foley because Foley cuts good emotional promos. It was a real good idea to use him to spice up this feud a little bit. There was a part of me that thought that they were going to replace Foley with Cena with Foley, and I was I was like, no, you know, because he's one of the people who made the Hell in the Cell famous, and yeah, I'm very happy that they didn't replace CM Punk with Foley. It would have been a good hardcore style match, but it's, you know, it's PG now, so they're not going to do too much. And then, I mean, Mick Foley, I mean, he's, you know, he's one of my favorites as far as WWE wrestler is concerned. But he's definitely not in condition to to spar with CM Punk in a Hell in a Cell main event match. And, you know, they probably could have put some good videos together to make it a Cinderella story, but it wouldn't have been believable. So, who did Taz have a year-long feud with in ECW? Before Rock and Cena, there was a better, to me, in my eyes, there was a better year-long feud with Taz and someone else in ECW. Foley encourages Punk to face Cena at Hell in a Cell, which was pretty good. But the bad part of that segment was I was hoping, you know, that Cena would just rest, because the thing is, they have to save him for Survivor Series. Survivor Series is a much grander stage. I mean, this is a Hell in a Cell. I mean, in all honesty, it's a throwaway pay-per-view. And so I really don't think it's a good idea to just really, really take Cena to the wire as far as his recovery, because he can re-aggravate his injury. So if he waits until November, you know, you got 2 months just about before Survivor Series. And it would be a much smarter idea. Having him wrestle at Hell in a Cell is just not going to be a good idea. It'd be really fresh off of his recovery if he recovers in time, and just not a good idea at all. Ryback defeats The Miz. Now, this is weird to me, because it looks like they were teasing a Ryback and Miz feud. Not only does Ryback defeat Miz, I mean, he defeats Miz. I mean, he nearly dominates the match. And that hurt Miz a whole lot. It hurt Ryback a little bit, just because I think that they could have built him more and got him more suspense, because he's still basically flooded with the Goldberg chance, which he needs to break away from that. It looks like they're trying to do the whole Goldberg thing with him, which could work as far as longevity is concerned. I mean, you know, he's got a mini streak going on already. Just don't don't say anything about the streak, though, as far as, like, making it a big deal. That would be horrible. But just beating him cleanly, I mean, the Miz is the Intercontinental Champion. So to get beat like that by Ryback was just not a good idea. And we'll talk later as far as what it seems like they're doing with Ryback. And I'll pitch an idea there, and it may work. Looks like see a right answer in the chat room. It is Taz. It was Sabu. Sabu was the year long feud that Taz had with in ECW. It was a very, very good feud. Definitely a very, very good feud as far as the setup for it. Heyman's a very, very good writer, and it was a very, very good feud. And Sabu had that type of thrill to him as far as the lights going off and it come back on as he's in the middle of the ring and pointing up. So it was a really, really good feud. Next question is, who trained Triple H? Who trained Triple H? And then another crazy part about the Ryback and Miz match is that some random guy just comes in the match and he gets attacked. I don't understand the whole. I don't understand why someone would just do that. I mean, you know good and well that, you know, it's all out at that point in time. You come over that ramp, and you're going to get beat up by security guards and wrestlers. I remember it was a match between Scott Hall and Randy Savage, I think it was, in WCW. And, yeah, there was some guy who tried to come over, and Scott Hall literally stomped on his head, and it was brutal. So I don't understand why people would think in their head, unless they're totally wasted, to come over the ramp and come in the ring during the match. That's just a horrible idea. So we'll see. We'll see if that guy's ever allowed to come to a WWE event again. Someone mentioned in the chat room about the RVD and Eddie Guerrero ladder match when a fan knocked the ladder over. I remember that one too. That was insane as well. I guess the good thing about that is that you know, people in the chat room years later are talking about it. We don't know who the guy, the person is, but we know the incident. So the guy, the person tried to probably get some fame just to, just to have the incident remembered, but not him. So it's really lose-lose situation for him anyways, because he gets ejected from the building, maybe banned as far as events too. So bad deal for people like him. Kane and Daniel Bryan diner segment number two. Very weird, the whole yes thing. It seems like there was some innuendos going there. It was just kind of weird, but it was funny, but it was weird. And then some random Mae Young appearance that was hilarious as well. So we'll keep seeing those, I'm sure, and it's a good way to keep the team fresh. Then we see AJ talking to referees and then Alberto Del Rio. Then she books Sheamus, Mysterio, and Sin Cara against Alberto Del Rio, David Otunga, and Ricardo Rodriguez. For some odd reason, I've got a soft spot for Rodriguez. He really does a good job. For those who don't know, he actually wrestled in FCW for a while, too. He's been wrestling for a while, actually, and he's actually pretty good. But they brought him in as a ring announcer. They called him up from FCW as a ring announcer. But, you know, we saw him at the Royal Rumble. He plays a comedic role. Him and Santino segment was very funny. But, you know, it seems like he's getting more pops than Santino these days. which is probably not the intention for the WWE, so something they probably want to reconsider. Then we have Wade Barrett defeating Tyson Kidd. Oh, my goodness. This is not okay to me. Wade Barrett cuts promo saying that he's not – I mean, he cut a promo on SmackDown a couple weeks ago saying that he's basically – wanting to go on strike until he finds some competition, but they're still having him go over mid-card jobbers. And so I don't think that that's a good idea. And the chat room is free to express how they feel about Wade Barrett's finishing maneuver, but the whole – he calls it the souvenir now. It's an elbow shot. He kind of does like a cross-arm thing and kind of brings him over and does an elbow shot. Now, the move itself isn't a bad move, but as far as a main eventer finisher move, I am not buying it. I don't think it's a good idea, and it's just something that you would have to oversell, and it's not a main event finisher move to me. So we'll see how far that goes. We're going to bring a Raw correspondent on here soon. Before that, Killer Kowalski is the right answer. And the next question is, where is Hacksaw Jim Duggan billed from? Throughout his career, where was Hacksaw Jim Duggan billed from? Before we bring on a real correspondent here, next we got Jerry Lawler interview, which was very poignant, very good. His voice is still raspy because he said it the tubes going down his throat and everything. So, but you know, he seems like we got New York in the chat room. What city? I don't see a city yet. What part of New York? So you know, it's definitely good to see. Definitely good to see that. So, next we got. Sin Cara, Mysterio, and Sheamus defeating Ricardo Rodriguez, Alberto Del Rio, and Otunga. Kind of surprised that Sin Cara took the fall based on some backstage reports of him not really being liked so much backstage. So, so we'll see where that goes. So. Looks like nobody is getting the city he was billed from Glen Falls, New York. So, interesting question posed on the chat room that I definitely totally agree on. Why in the world is Sheamus and Del Rio still going on? We thought the culmination of it was going to be at Night of Champions, but I mean, I really don't want to see it going forward. I actually wrote an article that made reference to it on Bleacher Report. Just please take us away from Sheamus and Alberto Del Rio. This has been driven to the ground for so long, it's horrible. And then after the match, Sheamus bro kicks Otunga. And to be honest with you, I would actually rather see Sheamus and Otunga feud than the Sheamus and Alberto Del Rio. Now, granted, Otunga is nowhere near the stature of Del Rio, although to me, and I've said this many times before, Del Rio is just not a main event guy in the WWE. He's more of a U.S. title, intercontinental title, upper mid-carder type of guy to me. He's not a main event guy. But at least they can change it up a little bit and have us see Sheamus with someone else. I mean, please take him off of Alberto Del Rio. We're going to bring in our Raw correspondent, Derek. Let's see what you got for us this week.
I knew it was Glen Falls, doggone it. But Raw was okay. It was decent. The only thing I'm really concerned about, the officiating, like I am with the NFL, they got the Monday Night Football. They messed that up so bad last night. I don't want the new Raw referees to make the same mistake when they shouldn't. I'm worried about that. And the whole CM Punk, he's no good. I'm the best in the world. That's been done so many times. It's so boring. CM Punk. I've written him off. He will never be anything like Triple H, Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart. He's a flash in the pan. And what else happened last night? John Cena, his breast cancer awareness, that shot him up a lot in my book. I never see him in that level. To me, he's always the new guy, the guy after the Attitude Era that I never really liked. I still don't, but he's moved a lot up in my book. So, but other than that, Raw was typical. It was a good Raw, but what do you think?
Awesome. Thanks a lot, Derek. I agree. The whole breast cancer awareness thing was has been really spot on. Many people who know me or read my articles or have listened to the show the past 5 months, they know that I'm not a Cena fan, but things like that, you know, makes me respect John Cena the person for sure. It definitely gives him a lot of points. I mean, he's great on the mic. I would say during the Rock feud and during this feud, his mic work has been good, but his mic work this past year and a half has been stellar. And many people know that I'm not a Cena fan whatsoever. But the whole breast cancer awareness thing definitely made me highly respect him as a man. As far as that is concerned, it's an amazing cause. And I have to admit, his mic work has been stellar the past year and a half during the Rock and Cena feud. I actually gave him more tallies per week, you know, before the WrestleMania match, they would do week after week and kind of try to one-up each other on promos. And it looks like Rock's promos were outdated, and I would have to give it to Cena. So kudos to Cena's mic work over the past year and a half. I mean, like I said, it's been good for the past few years, but the past year and a half, it definitely was up there. Definitely has been up there. Next question for the chat room or Crave Wrestling tweet at Crave Wrestling if you want to answer this question. Who managed the Sandman in WCW? ECW. Who managed the Sandman on ECW? Next question. That is the next question. Next we'll go to the Kane, Daniel Bryan, and Dr. Shelby Diner segment number 3. Funny as always. Definitely, it seems like I said before, it seems like they're doing the whole three-part thing, which, you know, I can see why, you know, it's 3 hours, and so they wanted to do that, but I don't know. It's a little, you know, you don't want to abuse that. You know, you don't want to make it overboard. So I hope it doesn't get too stale. But Raw Active decides on a team name for Kane and Daniel Bryan, and they choose Team Hell No. So I guess the Hell, Fire, and Brimstone for Kane, and the No, No, No for Daniel Bryan, and they put that together. I don't know how I feel about that. I think that they could have came up with a more wittier name for those three choices. Was just too cheesy to me. Team Hug It Out, I think, was another one, and Team Friendship, a little bit too much for me. I think they could have picked something else. Then they were attacked by Cody Rhodes and Damian Sandow. Now, we'll go to SmackDown here in a bit as far as how it started. But at the same time, I don't know if I'm sold on Rhodes and Sandow, because I think if anything, it kind of dilutes Sandow, because he was getting such a a mid-card push as a singles wrestler. And now, to me, he's more prone to lose because I definitely don't see them beating Kane and Daniel Bryan. And I also don't understand why they would have them aligned with each other at this point in time, where it seems like they're trying to boost the primetime players a little bit. So it's kind of confusing to me. And the team name for Rose and Sandow is horrible. I mean, like, I was waiting. I mean, just the cliffhanger that Cody Rhodes set up, you know, you call yourselves that, and, you know, we call ourselves, I'm paraphrasing what they said, but we, you know, call us the Rhodes Scholars. What in the world is that all about? That's such a horrible name. You know, I was expecting something way more inventive and creative and innovative than that. Team Rhodes Scholars is just horrible. So we will see if that sticks. But as far as I'm concerned right now, that's such a horrible name. No answer yet on the chat room or on the tweet. Who managed Damian Sandow in who managed the Sandman in ECW? Who managed the Sandman in ECW? Next, we have Eve and Beth Phoenix defeating Alicia Fox and Layla. This is totally just horrible. Yeah, anything related to the Divas division these days is just really not worth. Yeah, it's not worth it. It's really not worth talking about. Just horrible. The direction that they have right now in the Divas division is just totally, totally horrible. So we shall see where that goes. Hopefully they, like I said, hopefully they bring AJ back to there and have her be the face that chases the title. They need something to happen because right now it seems like Beth Phoenix is gone. Layla has not been over as a face yet, and I don't understand why they're still forcing her down her throats as a face. She's just not a face. So she tried it, didn't work, turn her heel again, and, you know, we'll see where that goes. Who was unfortunate, but this is unfortunate, but who was depicted as the deadbeat dad on the Beyond the Mat documentary? Who was depicted? Oh, and the answer to the Sandman question was Woman. Woman was the manager of Sandman in ECW, who was depicted as the deadbeat dad on the Beyond the Mat documentary. Then Caitlin comes out and says that tape confirms that she was attacked by a blonde. Beth Phoenix professes innocence, and Eve doesn't buy it and gives her the neckbreaker. I do like the neckbreaker finisher by Eve. It's a cool move. I like it. But I mean, what does this mean, though? I mean, Beth Phoenix is on her way out. Is she going to get fired because she attacked her? Was it someone in a wig? I mean, I don't understand where this is going. So, you know, we shall see. Brodus Clay and Tensai go against each other. I was actually excited about this match because of the two big men against each other. Was a good idea, but it gets ruined. It gets ruined by the Big Show returning and gives them both in a WMD. Horrible, 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 wasteful return for the Big Show. Now I wrote an article on Bleacher Report about the five puzzling questions left after Night of Champions, and one of the questions is what's next for Heyman and CM Punk? And I actually posed an idea that Show should come back as the Heyman and Punk enforcer, like an enforcer for CM Punk on behalf of Paul Heyman, because many people know in the early 2000s, Heyman managed the Big Show, actually to a title reign at that point in time as well. So because we really don't need much of the Big Show anymore. I mean, he's just about reached the tail end of his career, and we really don't need him involved in much wrestling right now. And I don't understand why they would have him involved with anything like any big angle right now. He needs to be spared as far as being in the ring. He needs to be an enforcer for CM Punk. Perfect spot for him. Not much wrestling, you know, not overdoing it. And, you know, that would be the best idea. But somehow, I mean, I really hope that we won't be seeing a triple threat match between Brodus Clay, Tensai, and Big Show at Hell in a Cell. That would be a bathroom break match of the night. And that's usually the Divas match, but the Divas match would probably be better than that match. And that's not saying much at all. Next, we got John Cena's promo. Promises he'll be at Hell in a Cell. Who cares, really? I mean, that's how I feel about it. I really, it seems like they had to change the writing, and now the big suspense is he'll be a Hell in a Cell. I don't understand it. Punk comes out with Heyman. I think that was Punk's third visit of the night. He got over-punked. Cena eventually hits Punk with the pipe. I guess we got a shout-out to Scott Steiner at that point in time. I really don't understand the pipe. I guess since he had one arm, that was his equalizer. Not really understanding it. But Punk attacks Foley backstage and eventually becomes face-to-face. He was going to turn back around and do something else to Foley, and then he gets kind of like taken back. And so there was a part of me, I mean, I was intrigued to see who the person was that they were going to zoom the camera to. But honestly, my cynical WWE mentality was saying, okay, there's a big part of me that don't believe that the payoff's going to be good. And honestly, to me, I don't think the payoff was that good. Ryback was the person that they chose, and I think it's too soon for Ryback. I think it's too soon. I'm not opposed to Ryback's push, but it seems like he's going to be a plan B. If Cena's not healed enough, looks like they may give Ryback the go-ahead for that. Ryback against CM Punk at Hell in a Cell. If it's actually a Hell in a Cell match, it's going to be even more boring. Not yet. Honestly, I really think that the feud with him and Miz should have been drawn out a little bit more, and they could have given him the Intercontinental title, because, I mean, other than the fact that he beat some jobbers and Jinder Mahal and Tyler Rex and Curt Hawkins together, and The Miz, I mean, he hasn't really proven himself, you know. And he's still a little stiff in the ring. You know, I like his look. I like his physique, but not quite yet. So we'll see where that goes. It seemed like it's a plan B. So both plan A, John Cena, and plan B, Ryback, is not a good idea to me. I also wrote an article on Bleacher Report that I think I need to explain a little bit. I wrote an article on Bleacher Report that said that my views of why an Armageddon Hell in a Cell match would be a better idea than just putting one person in the match. Now, so many people commented totally out of context, thinking that I was comparing the actual Armageddon Hell in a Cell match from 2000 to this age. I absolutely was not doing that. It was five Hall of Famers and Rikishi. The Hall of Famers were Austin, Taker, Rock, Angle, and Triple H. And then Rikishi, you know, I wasn't too opposed to his involvement there. I think it was an okay deal for him. You know, he was around for a while, and, you know, he was a heel at the time. I did it for The Rock and all that, you know, became heel. So, you know, it was a good push for him at the time. I don't see him. Well, he may be a Hall of Famer. You know, we will see. We will see. I can see him maybe being in the Coco Beware wing of the Hall of Fame. So we'll see if he gets a spot. But, you know, it won't be compared to that match. That was an amazing match. Rikishi took a monster bump to the tractor and fell off the cage, you know, via The Undertaker. But, you know, I threw some names out there. I said the five other people that could go against Punk would be Kofi Kingston, who defeated Punk and Randy Orton at a Survivor Series a few years ago. R-Truth, which would be a good athletic addition to the Hell in a Cell match. Rey Mysterio pretty much explains itself, former WWE and World Heavyweight Champion. Alberto Del Rio, I'm not a fan of him, but he would fit into the mode of being one of the six. And so, yeah, and Cody Rhodes is my other choice, but just because, you know, he's a good name to put in that type of match. But it doesn't seem like Cody Rhodes is going to be in any singles action soon, but that was the context of my the point of it was that it could keep Cena off of TV, and after that Armageddon Hell in a Cell match, like, that could be it. It would just be that match. It wouldn't go any further because it would just be the big gimmick match. Doesn't go further. Punk wins, and we will see some good action. So, you know, I'm so fortunate, so blessed to be a featured columnist in the Bleacher Report. But I'll tell you what, that the IWC is hard to impress or hard to satisfy, and a lot of times the satisfaction makes absolutely no sense. So. Thank you so much for supporting my articles, but, you know, comment and context. All right, so we'll go to SmackDown. The next question before we go there is, who did the Quebecers defeat for the WWE tag titles? Their first title reign, who did they defeat for the tag titles? And if you want to one-up me, feel free to let me know the stipulation of how they won. So, the stipulation of how they won, Quebecers, who did they defeat to win their first WWE tag team titles? On the SmackDown, as we do, 347-884-8452 is the number to call. Feel free to call in. 347-884-8452. Looks like we got some tweets here. Send your tweet to @CraveWrestling, and if it's worth reading, I'll definitely read it. Usually get some good tweets there every week, and if time permitting, we read them. Otherwise, just hang out in the chat room, make comments there. Looks like there's some good involvement in the chat room. The question again was, who did the Quebecers defeat for their first WWE tag titles? And what was the stipulation to that? A recap of SmackDown. Edge cuts a promo, interrupted by Daniel Bryan. Then Kane. Kane and Edge hug. Daniel Bryan is about to hug them, but Damian Sandow interrupts. Damian Sandow defeats Kane. Kane, Daniel Bryan, and Dr. Shelby backstage segment. Alberto Del Rio and Booker T backstage segment. Layla defeats Natalya. Sheamus and Orton defeats Dolph Ziggler and Alberto Del Rio. Cody Rhodes defeats Daniel Bryan through the help of Kane, and Sandow defeats Kane because Daniel Bryan went on the ropes and interrupted Kane as well. Kane laughs on stage. Then we see Kane and Daniel Bryan argue backstage. They see Rhodes and Sandow and challenges them to a tag match. Brodus Clay defeats Heath Slater by disqualification. He was attacked during the match by Jinder Mahal and Drew McIntyre. Now, we shall see if this stable is going to go anywhere. Now, it seems like it seems like they're kind of changing Heath Slater's persona a little bit. It seemed like a little bit more serious, but I don't think that's a good idea. He still did his rocker gestures, so I think the comedic heel one man band, it works a little bit better for Heath Slater. I don't know how I feel about this stable yet. I'm glad that Drew McIntyre is getting some TV time now. I don't have too many bad things to say about Jinder Mahal. I think he's a solid mid-carder that the WWE needs right now. I don't know. I don't know how I feel about them yet. So we'll see as this progresses as far as this stable is concerned. Santino defeats Antonio Cesaro. Cesaro dumps Oksana, which I think will be I think will hurt him. I think that will hurt Cesaro because the Oksana addition to Antonio Cesaro is a help. It's a help, and him being him by himself. I don't know if that was a good idea. So we'll see how that works. Kane and Daniel Bryan defeats Rhodes and Sandow by DQ. And then at the end, Kane and Daniel Bryan trade chair shots on Rhodes and Sandow and other tag teams, the primetime players, Justin Gabriel and Tyson Kidd, which I think they called. I think there was some I think that there were some rumblings about them being called International Airstrike. I think International Airstrike was a name that they were considering giving them. Good team. I don't have anything to say about the team that's negative, other than the fact that they lose a lot. So maybe that they'll get some wins lately. The Quebecers, nobody has tweeted the right answer, or the chat room is not finding the answer as well. They defeated the Steiner Brothers in a Quebec Rules match. So part of the Quebec Rules was winning by disqualification. So, that's how they won the tag title match. So we'll ask another question here soon. Before then, we'll go to Impact Wrestling Open Fight Night. Hulk Hogan and Shaq backstage segment. Shaq, he's in good shape again, so that's good. He got out of shape a few years back, and he got back into decent shape when he came as a special host, guest host, when they had the celebrity general managers. He had a face-to-face with Big Show. Real quick, what pay-per-view was The Undertaker versus The Undertaker? What pay-per-view was The Undertaker versus The Undertaker? And if you want to one-up me, feel free to let me know the year of the pay-per-view as well. Undertaker versus Undertaker. Angle and AJ calls out Chavo and Hernandez. So, the open fight night once again. Angle and AJ calls out Chavo and Hernandez. Double DQ, no contest, because they were attacked by Daniels and Kazarian. Chavo sucks chance. So, yeah, it looks like he may be getting the heel again. Hogan books three-way title match at Bound for Glory. Good idea. Backstage interview with Al Snow. Even Markopoulos gut check with Doug Williams. he's another person, man, that's, I don't know, something about me and European wrestlers. I've been watching wrestling for all of my life, which has been a considerable amount of time, enough to know about the 80s and the 90s. And to me, I don't know, it's Fit Finley's, really like Fit Finley, really like Doug Williams. I did not like Ludwig Borga when he was a part of the WWE, but, you know, yeah, something about European wrestlers that William Regal, I like him a lot. So, not too big on Wade Barrett. I mean, I like Wade Barrett, but I think what they're doing with him now, I'm not a big fan of it, so... Yeah, but Doug Williams, he has a amazing finisher. He calls the Chaos Theory. It's a rolling German suplex. It's actually one of the best moves that I've seen in wrestling still. James Storm calls out Bobby Roode. Roode cuts promo and denies. Hogan gives an ultimatum backstage. Roode eventually fights Storm, a double DQ, but they continue to fight. Then we see a Hogan backstage segment. Austin Aries and Jeff Hardy backstage segment. Tara cuts promo. She heals it up. Then she calls out Christy Hemme. And then eventually Hemme comes out and gets bullied by Tara. And then Miss Tessmacher comes out and saves Hemme. Brooke Hogan and Tara argue backstage. Hulk Hogan in-ring promo. And then Austin Aries calls out Bully Ray. Bully Ray defeats Austin Aries. Interesting. I don't know if this is going to go further as far as Bound for Glory is concerned, but interesting win that Bully Ray defeats the world champion. Jeff Hardy comes out and saves Aries, and then Aries argues with Hardy, says that he doesn't need his help. Open fight night, I mean, you know, the open fight night, I like the concept a lot. Surprised that we didn't get much. That we didn't get the Aces and Eights. There were some rumblings that Joseph Park. Well, we did see a backstage segment where the Aces and Eights attacked Joseph Park, and they had him like confined in a room because he had like I think he had like a computer with some evidence on it of who it is, which is good. But you're setting this up for Bound for Glory, which is in 2 weeks, and so I don't think it's a good idea that they are deciding to wait this long to build up who was behind Aces and Eights. I think they should have done like I said before, they should have done that at No Surrender, and they should have used that and catapulted for the rest of the month leading to Bound for Glory. So. Man, the answer to Undertaker versus Undertaker was indeed SummerSlam of 1994. And if anybody wanted to tweet or chat room, who was the other Undertaker? What was his other wrestling gimmick name? I'll accept one of two answers. Then we got Ring of Honor. The results, they did some recaps of Boiling Point. The Boiling Point recaps and a couple good matches from there. They had Brutal Bob Evans and Adam Cole. He won, and then he gets jumped by. Mike Bennett. We see that QT Marshall wins the four-way match to get the contract, and Mike Mondo loses to Roderick Strong, and then the main event was Eddie Edwards and Sarah Del Rey defeating Maria and Mike Bennett. So. You know, typical ROH, nothing too big, just really a recap. So, Yeah, I mean, you know, you really can't get much when you're recapping a pay-per-view. So, Mark Madden actually made a actually spoke very lowly about ROH, basically talk about how bad their production is, and you know, their production is pretty bad, but at the same time, their competition, their level of competition is very good. So I definitely have to give it up for that. Looks like we do not have an answer yet. He was a part of the DOA, Disciples of Apocalypse. He was Chains. Also, Primetime Brian Lee in the ECW. Primetime Brian Lee in the ECW. Who managed The Undertaker when he debuted? Then the final part of the evening would be the flavor of the week. The fastest rising superstars. Now, let me preface this real quick. There was some comments. I wrote the article in Bleacher Report. There was some comments that kept saying Sheamus and The Undertaker and things of that nature. That's not what I'm saying. That's not where I'm going with this. Where I'm going is people who started wrestling and within about, you know, 3 or so years, 3 years or less of their debut to wrestling period, to their start of wrestling, they become world champions. So Alberto Del Rio was a comment that was left. Alberto Del Rio has been wrestling since 2000. He's been wrestling for 12 years. It took him 11 years to get to that prize as far as the WWE Championship. He was wrestling in CMLL a lot. He was a champion there for over a year. So Sheamus is another person that was commenting a lot. Sheamus has been wrestling since 2002. He was wrestled primarily for Irish Whip Wrestling in Ireland. Had some good feuds with Drew Galloway, a.k.a. Drew McIntyre, as well as Wade Barrett. He went by a different name. First name was Stu. He went by a different name at the time, but it was Wade Barrett. So around 2006 era, he had some good feuds with them in Ireland. So he's been wrestling for 10 years. So these are people who started wrestling and within a few years became world champion. So, the Brother Love is indeed the right answer. So, congratulations. What team was The Undertaker a part of in WCW? And who was his partner? First, we'll go off with the honorable mention, John Cena. John Cena started in 2001 era for the developmental territory as a prototype. I got caught up to the WWE in 2002. Summer 2002, good match. Surprisingly, as stiff as John Cena has been over the years in the ring, he actually had a pretty decent match against Kurt Angle in his debut. So, and then eventually turns on Kidman, turns heel, begins the Thugonomics heel gimmick, and then eventually turns face to Chain Gang Soldier, and he wins the world title in 2005, so about 3.5 or so years after he started wrestling, he became world champion. Honorable mention just because it barely passed the 3-year mark. So these wrestlers that I'm about to name, within 3 years of them starting wrestling, they became world champ. First, I'll start off with Jack Swagger. He started in 2007. He wrestled for their developmental territory and then was in FCW. It's actually Jake Hager in FCW. And then it gets caught up to ECW in 2009. And he becomes, a few months after he gets caught up to ECW, he becomes ECW champion, gets drafted to Raw. And we saw what happened as far as him winning the Money in the Bank tag match. I'm sorry, it's the Money in Bank ladder match a couple of WrestleManias ago, WrestleMania 26. Within a week of him winning, he defects to SmackDown by cashing it against Chris Jericho. So within 3 years, less than 3 years of him starting wrestling, he became world champ. Next, we'll go to the Giant, a.k.a. The Big Show. The Big Show, he actually, interestingly enough, and I don't know if a lot of people remember this or know this, but the Big Show actually won the World Heavyweight Championship in WCW, his very first match. There was a stipulation where you could win it at that time, in that match, you could win it by disqualification, and Jimmy Hart turns on Hogan, starts the whole Dungeon of Doom thing. He wins. He wins his first match. So match number one for the Giant, he becomes World Heavyweight Champion. So didn't keep it for long, his first reign. But, yeah, the very first day. I mean, what more can you ask for to first day on a job become the top guy? So they had enough faith in him to give him that spot. I wouldn't have, but I guess it was a good transitional feud for Hogan because he was the big face at the time. So it was a big feud. It was a big man feud for him. I think they even billed Big Show as Andre the Giant's son for a time, which is a little over the top. But yeah, we saw how long that lasted, which was not long. The Rock, of course, starts off USWA for a little bit as Flex of Honor. 1996, debuts at the Survivor Series, and he his first match he was the sole survivor for his team. Eventually, he eventually turns heel. 3 months after the Survivor Series, he beats Triple H and becomes Intercontinental Championship. So 3 months after his debut, becomes Intercontinental Champion. Eventually, turns heel, joins the Nation, feuds with Austin. And then 2 years later, in Survivor Series 1998, in the vacant WWE Championship Tournament, it was a double turn. McMahon was aligned with Mankind was aligned with the McMahons, but The Rock defeats Mankind and becomes the WWE Champion. So 2 years after he debuted, in about 2 years. To a little bit over 2 years, 2.5 years or so after he started wrestling. Next, we have Kurt Angle. Kurt Angle started wrestling in 1999. He debuted, he defeated Sean Stasiak in the Survivor Series of 1999. A few months later after that, I believe February of 2000, he wins both the Intercontinental and the European Championship. He coins himself the Eurocontinental Champion, loses both of those belts to, I believe it was Eddie Guerrero and Chris Jericho, or was it Chris Benoit and Chris Jericho? Chat rumor tweet. That answer, I believe it was Chris Benoit and Chris Jericho, because Chris Benoit won the Intercontinental title, and Chris Jericho won the European title. And then eventually, in October of 2000, less than a year, 11 months after he debuted, he beats The Rock and becomes world champion, and becomes WWE champion, and you know, his career just catapulted from there. So he still, you know, that push actually, you know, helped him. It wasn't a Jack Swagger type of thing that he was buried after a certain amount of time. And finally, we have well, the two more. Brock Lesnar, of course, he starts wrestling. He starts in the developmental territory in 2001. Had a Minnesota Wrecking Crew, I believe his team name was, with Shelton Benjamin. And so, yeah, that was his start in developmental. He comes in 2002, debuts night after WrestleMania by attacking Maven, Spike Dudley, and Al Snow during their hardcore match. And just, I mean, you know, what is it? That was March the 19th, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. And then in June, he wins the King of the Ring by defeating RVD in the finals. And then just 5 months after he debuted, he beats The Rock at Survivor Series. So that's, to this day, still the, he was 25 at the time in 2002. And to this day, he is the youngest WWE champion in company history and the fastest rising with only 5 months from his television debut. So they really put a whole lot of stock in Brock Lesnar. He drew some money. I mean, he drew some money for a good year and a half or so. Two years, he drew good money, the top guy. But we know what happened. He left and tried to play for the Vikings, and that didn't work. Had a fairly decent UFC run, became the UFC champion. He got stricken with an illness, unfortunately, and caused him to leave UFC and come back on a limited date contract with the WWE. It's just not the same like it was, but, you know, it was good to see Lesnar back probably the first time or two, but it's just, I don't know, might have missed the bus on that one. So we'll see what Brock Lesnar's next angle is. And then lastly, before we close here, Goldberg. The answer was the Skyscrapers for Undertaker's team name, and looks like the partner was correct in the chat room, Dangerous Dan Spivey. It was Dangerous Dan Spivey. And lastly, we got Goldberg. Pretty much self-explanatory. Started in 97. Defeats Hugh Morris. He was kind of a heel at the time, but he was so electrifying and just, yeah, he was just so high intensity that he became just the most anticipated wrestler to see in the WCW. The streak, I believe it was 173 or 174 in before he loses his first match. It was 1998, so it was less than a year that he debuted. He defeats Hogan on an episode of Nitro. That's probably one of the most memorable episodes of Nitro. I mean, the whole angle was developed that day. I mean, a lot of people, you know, said that was a bad move by Eric Bischoff, but I don't know. I mean, I can understand, you know, save that for, it can draw more money, save it for the pay-per-view, but, you know, it was a gutsy move that I believe it worked out. And Goldberg became a champion in 1998. So that was one of the best, you know. Feel free to go on the chat line or tweet who was your favorite out of those people who I named. Who was your favorite person that was on the rise, the fastest rising person. But thanks so much for listening, like we do every week. Follow at Crave Wrestling. 347-884-8452 is the number to put in your back pocket for next week. Feel free to call and tune in. Thanks for everybody who was in the chat room. Very interactive today. We do this every week, and thank you so much. Just the numbers are growing exponentially as far as the support. as far as the listeners and the tweets that Crave Wrestling gets, and definitely appreciate it. Follow Crave Wrestling. Like Crave Wrestling on Facebook. Check me out on Bleacher Report, Chris Featherstone. Check me out on Bleacher Report. I feature columnists at the Bleacher Report and write some sometimes controversial and sometimes informative articles. So thanks so much for your support. Submit your Flavor of the Week topics. We have the Flavor of the Week every week. I just talk about a random topic. Submit any request of a Flavor of the Week topic to cravewrestling@gmail.com. Otherwise, enjoy your week of wrestling, and God bless. Goodbye.